D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. Before we get to our Cam Ward discussion, in the previous segment, we were talking about off-the-wall questions that NHL teams asked prospects at the NHL draft combine, one of which was, what would the prospect do if he ordered a BLT with cheese and it arrived at the table without cheese? And I said, if he's a grown man, he's not ordering it with cheese. But that wasn't the question. Scott on our phone line quickly has a reaction to this. Scott, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, I know you guys think it's gross, but don't knock it till you've tried it. But as a grown man, you just eat the sandwich.
Thank you, Scott.
I can see people just
eat the
saying,
sandwich
you know
and don't
what?
Complain.
Right.
Yeah, but
well,
still.
On the opposite end, Mark in Ashland City says, if someone screws up, do you have the, you know what, the cojones to call them on it? It doesn't have to be rude, but do you make sure the people around you get it right?
Yes.
Yes. That's why I think the time frame that you're in, the atmosphere you're in, is relevant there. So that's what I'm curious with these kids are 17, 18 years old, right? So they're answering this. They all have probably different perspectives on it. But what was it, a texter or somebody who brought this up, Adam, during the conversation last hour? Are you just hoping that you get an engaging answer?
Right.
And somebody who's decisive enough to give an answer and put something behind it, put some thought behind it, regardless of what the answer is?
Yes.
Or is there some, you know, like I said, some sports psychologist who that give me the data and this guy's wrong. He said this. We don't want this guy.
It's a good question.
There should be no right or wrong answers, you would think.
Yes. Jeff Marek will join the show tomorrow. I bet he would have a lot of insight into this.
That'll be fun. You're not going to want to miss that.
So we'll talk to Jeff about it tomorrow. But in the meantime, we know it's year two for Cam Ward in the NFL. It's a big year for Cam Ward in the NFL. Earlier today, we talked to Teron Davenport. He gave us his review of Cam Ward through three OTA practices. He said he's still learning, all of those things. And over the weekend, I heard a really interesting discussion by the Athletic Football Show. You were about to hear Robert Mays discuss Cam Ward. Mays and his co-host were talking about the other year two quarterbacks along with Ward. That's what the whole episode was about. Ward and Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, etc. Listen to what Robert Mays says about Cam Ward, and then we'll get into our discussion.
It is very similar to a lot of the ways that we play golf, just like amateur golfers. Like, it's your entire round is just horse. But if you get those one or two that feel good, that's enough to keep you coming back potentially. That's kind of where we are with Cam Ward. And the question that I think you have to ask yourself is, should we do that? Like, are those high-end moments and some of the stuff where it's like, man, I really like this, is that enough to hang on to when you consider how much bad there was on the tape? It's not just the analytical profile or the statistical profile. There was some decent amount of bad stuff, like watching him down to down. And we could talk about why that happened. So are those flashes, are those moments of that high-end stuff and high-end arm talent, is that enough to shine through a lot of the questions and the concerns that we have? I think that's going to be at the center of the discussion about Cam Ward as we think about what he can be in year two.
As Cam Ward enters year two of his NFL career, he is caught between two warring factions, the ball knowers / film watchers and the nerds. I say that mostly in jest, of course. The ball knowers / film watchers will tell you that Ward played much better last season than his numbers showed. If you just watch the tape, they'll tell you his best throws stand up with those of Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and others during their rookie seasons. Meanwhile, by almost any meaningful metric, Ward was arguably the worst starting quarterback in the NFL last season. For example, Ward's QBR, which is meant to incorporate all of a quarterback's contributions to winning, was the lowest of any qualified quarterback in the NFL last season. I have been fascinated, guys, by how people's perception of Ward has been shaped depending on which side of the fence you stand on. Ideally, you marry the objective and the subjective and allow them to work together. But I want to ask this question to both of you and all of you at 615-737-1025. Which do you prioritize more when evaluating Cam Ward? Are there enough of those so-called wow plays on tape for you to disregard what the data is telling you? Who would like to go first?
Okay. I was listening to Shannon Sharp and Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's an astrophysicist.
That's an interesting podcast.
Yeah, it was. I found it very interesting. And Shannon asked him, is it tougher to throw a strike or is it tougher to throw a touchdown pass? And it seems like throw a strike. But he said, no, because there's more. He said, throwing a touchdown is harder because it has more variables. There's people trying to get you. There's somebody protecting you that if they don't protect you, you're going to get hit. And then if you manage to get the ball off in front of all these people, you're throwing it to a spot that you expect the receiver to go to, and he has to then catch it with a guy that's guarding him and all over him. So the chances of him catching that touchdown decreases tremendously as opposed to a pitcher throwing it to an area. It's going to be a strike regardless. Now, if the guy swings and hit, it's different, but there's a lot more variables in front of the quarterback that makes it harder to throw a touchdown. I said that to say this. Yeah, you can just look at the wild plays. I think when he tried to make the analogy with golf, it's a little bit off. Because in golf, it's just you and the ball. Yeah, there are variables. There's, the weather and everything else. But if I get one good hit in golf, okay, yeah, that's going to allow you to – I'm going to stay in it. Why? Because there's not all these other variables that could affect you. Either you're a good golfer, you're a bad golfer. It's one or the other. In football, to me, it's Cam Ward. You look at the wild plays. Yeah, but it's not really about the wild plays. It's about the plays he probably didn't make that wasn't – he didn't make them because of his lack or his lack of ability to make it, but because the offensive line sacked him. He got pressure. Maybe he threw the ball in the right spot. The guy didn't catch it. The guy didn't run the right route. I'm thinking he was supposed to run this. I throw it. The guy runs that. So there are a lot of other variables in the midst of Cam being the quarterback that we want him to be. We can't just say, oh, Cam, he's horrible because this, this, and this. Well, what if he had this in front of him? What if he had that person to throw it to? What if those variables were different? What if he had a Justin Jefferson? What if he had an offensive line like the Philadelphia Eagles? What if he had Saquon Barkley in the backfield?
Right.
How much different would he be? And I can say this. He looked like a much different quarterback in the second half of the season. Minus the wild plays kept us intrigued for the first half. The second half, he showed that if things get better around him, he becomes a better quarterback. He can make those plays. So I'm not just going to look at it and say, well, just because he made those wild plays, I think he has a guy. I think he's a guy. You know who else made those wild plays? And he wasn't a guy? Will Levis. So I am not just going to look at the wild plays. I'm going to look at the totality of it and see why he didn't make that throw or why that throw didn't get completed or why his completion rating percentage is down. I need to look at all of that. I just can't say, well, it's him and it's solely him, so he's either going to be this or that. There's a lot of variables in between that.
I think they did a good job on that podcast of laying out this debate because I think it's everything. Because I agree with you, Derek. A part of the numbers can be explained away by, as I called it all season long, the gasoline fire. He was in survival mode for most of the year. And so your numbers just weren't going to be good. But the problem is, his analytic numbers weren't just below average. They were way down there. And I think that's where sort of an analytics-based take where these two guys come from, I think. Would you agree, Adam? Those guys are they're analyzing film, but they're also heavily looking at the analytics.
Yes.
Like the EPA, right? You know, when we were growing up, Derek, nobody had ever thought of EPA or heard of EPA. You never looked at it. It wasn't on the back of the football card. It was nowhere in the newspapers. You know, we're dating ourselves, right? These numbers have advanced. EPA has become a really important number. And Adam, could you explain EPA in a nutshell? Something so you could probably do it better than me, but I will tell you that Cam Ward was dead last, a distant last in EPA, which is a number that a lot of people look at. And so you ask yourself, yes, Tate will help, an improved offensive line will help, another year under the belt will help, but could it get him where they ultimately want to go? Is there a problem with these numbers? And pick whatever fancy stat you want to pick out. QBR for ESPN, dead last. They mentioned in that podcast, Next Gen Stats, for first-year quarterbacks that started a certain amount of games through a certain amount of passes. You have to go back to 2016. It was, what was the guy's name?
DeShone Kizer.
DeShone Kizer.
Zach Wilson. C.J. Beathard were some of the quarterbacks being mentioned in the same breath as Cam Ward statistically.
And if that doesn't scare you, if that doesn't scare you a little bit, then you're even more optimistic than me, who it was very optimistic, right? You know, I know, and they made this point on the podcast. He is going to work. He's not going to fail because he doesn't put the time in and the effort in. And they made the point that each year in college, he improved. And I'm banking on that some. But he's starting. We got to be honest about what happened last year and why. And he's got a long way to go before he gets even average, right? But based on those numbers, based on the analytic numbers.
Okay, wouldn't you say that if you're asking a guy, and you can say whether it's basketball, well, basketball would probably, there's sort of this direct correlation to what I'm saying. But if you're asking a guy or girl to do more, are they more likely to not perform at a high level that you're at, the level that you're asking them to perform at? Because I not only do I got to do my job, I got to do everybody else's job.
Yes.
So the performance, because now I got to spread myself thin. And now you're not getting the best version of who I am as a player. Right. So those things that we talk about, and McCoy even said it last year. He said, listen, we see the day-to-day stuff that Cam does. He didn't say it sort of – I'm just paraphrasing him. We see the day-to-day things that Cam does. So that encourages us every day that, yeah, it may not work the way we thought it would work, but – we know what's supposed to go on. And knowing that and knowing how the quarterback sees it, it may not happen, but he knows what he's doing. But those other people are not doing their
job.
Right.
And all of those layers are contributing to that number that only says next to Cam Ward.
Exactly.
Right?
So when you're in it, you can
QBR
see the progress.
Your QBR is Cam Ward. It's not Cam Ward and all the other screw-ups that the coach has made and the personnel and the, you know, it's all goes to him when it's certainly not all on him. It's a team game. So I get that.
I also think working against Cam Ward is, of course, his label as the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. We went through this so many times last year about the diverse group of quarterbacks who were drafted number one overall. A lot of them have panned out. Even more of them have failed to live up to expectations. But when you've got that attached to you, you're the number one overall pick in the draft. There will always be a significant expectation upon you. And we can all agree that Cam Ward last season, and I'll get into what I saw, because I am not a ball knower / film watcher. That's not my area of expertise when it comes to football. I can look at the data, and I'll tell you what I saw when I look at the data. But it's a really interesting conversation, because we see it on our phone line, on our text line, anytime we bring up Cam Ward. It really is interesting how these two, as I said, warring factions have come together when debating Cam Ward. And we will continue this conversation on the other side, 615-737-1025. Which do you prioritize more when evaluating Cam Ward? The tape or the data? Again, you want to marry the two. That's the goal. You want to marry the two. But there are two sides to this equation. Which one do you prioritize more? 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
And so I think if you're going to harbor as much optimism for Cam Ward as you do, and then I think I'm a little bit further back but still have some, you truly have to talk yourself into the idea of, even with as many red flags as there might be, as many warning signs as there might be, if the circumstances improve, if they go from truly bottom of the barrel to merely below average with a Wandell Robinson, with a Carnell Tate, with Brian Daboll coming in there, can he look like a dramatically different player? There's a little bit of wish casting in that, right? Like, you got to talk yourself into that a little bit. You got to convince yourself of it. But I don't think it's a crazy thing to try to talk yourself into. I think it's actually a reasonable place to land.
That was Robert Mays on the Athletic Football Show talking about Cam Ward. We are also talking about Cam Ward. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Talking about Cam Ward and the warring factions. The film watchers / ball knowers and the nerds. Which do you prioritize more when evaluating Cam Ward? 615-737-1025. Let's go to our phone line first and welcome in Luca. Luca, thank you for calling. Please go ahead. Go ahead.
Am I on?
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, it's Luke. But sorry, no worries. Luke. No worries. D-Mace, tell Darren to stop power washing his house because it's raining out here. Anyway, I'm a Cam Ward guy, and the thing I hated about college was group projects, right? And I think that was a total group project fail last year. Coaching staff, the organization, the players around Cam, and even Cam himself. I do think that Cam should get better. I'm gonna be open to that. I think kind of one of the best things and the worst things that could happen with Cam Ward is Brian Daboll. Good because Brian Daboll will help him. Bad because Daboll's going to leave after this year and go be a head coach. So that's my biggest concern. But you can't understate that won't help Cam get better. But the jury is still out. And he should get better, and we'll just see how he does. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Luke. I do think there are a lot of people hoping that with competent coaching, Cam Ward will be a lot better. Let's be honest. Brian Callahan wasn't cut out to be a play caller in the NFL. And then Mike McCoy came in here, and that was a whole thing. Okay, I'm already blanking. Who was the guy who called plays for the Titans after Brian Callahan?
Bo
Hardigree. Thank you. Yeah. The quarterback's coach. Now you have Brian Daboll, who is an experienced play caller, who has worked well with a lot of good quarterbacks. A lot of people are hoping and wishing and praying, wish casting, as Robert May said, wish casting, that Brian Daboll can help Cam Ward, a better wide receiver core with Wandale Robinson and Carnell Tate, and a healthy Calvin Ridley. A lot of people are holding out hope. I am wondering, however, what the conversation will be if Cam Ward struggles again this season, despite having better coaching and better weapons. Because that's one thing a lot of people have honed in on. One texter says, how can Cam be consistent making plays when he had no line or weapons last season? Well, there are still questions about the offensive line.
Yes.
He does have weapons this year. He's got better coaching this year. So what then?
I mean, if he doesn't develop and make that jump this year, then you have no choice but to say it's on Cam Ward. There's no way around it. If indeed these guys go out and no one gets injured, and you're assuming that Wandale Robinson will either play the same as he did last year with the Giants or even better, and you believe that Carnell Tate is an upgrade to anything they had last year, you're believing that Calvin Ridley is going to stay injured and Elik and DK are going to develop, and so does Gunnar Helm. And that's not even, like you said, that's not even really talking about the offensive line. So based upon that, based upon what I see, my mind automatically goes to Cam should be better. Looking at his makeup, looking at his past, you lean more toward him getting better than him not, because everywhere he's went, he's been able to develop as a player and got better. And again, it's not just cut and dry. Again, I've always said there's a place for analytics in this game, and then there's a place for just watching football. You got to find a way where both of them can coexist at the same time when you're discussing one player. And with Cam, that's the case. Yes, the analytics says this, but also when I look at the film, if I know what I'm looking at, it tells me if this was different, if this was different, then Cam's outcome would be different. So I think both of them can live in the same space, but I also can look at it and say, well, if the people around him gets better, then he should, based upon what I've seen, not even looking at the numbers, but based upon what I've seen, he should get better.
So let's make a point in defense of Callahan, because Callahan, he had so little success and so many things went wrong, and he was in a tough situation personnel-wise. But one thing he said that at the time was kind of mocked, but I really do think there is something to it. He said Cam Ward has got to get better at the boring, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to get better at those play-in, play-out little things, the simplest, take what the defense gives you, the things that will simplify and hopefully lead to better results. Mm-hmm. And I do think that is where that improvement's got to come from. And another thing they discussed in the podcast a lot was being able to cut down on the number of sacks, right? And a lot of that might be just, you see that first read, it's open, take it, right? Where he might still be wired and unlearning the, hey, everywhere I've been, that first read's there, but I'm looking for the big one. I'm looking for that next one. I'll wait because I can hit it down the field. And there was a lot of lack of success when those situations happened last year.
Well, you can get away with it in college.
Yeah, he was able to out-talent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in the NFL, that's why they had a problem with Cam at the beginning of the season. Because, and we talked about it, it seemed like they were working top to bottom instead of, you know, bottom to top, meaning taking the first read, and then if it's not there, going to your second, and meaning the short pass, not automatically trying to go deep on your first look and then coming back down. And I thought he got better at that, you know, the second half of the season after the bye, where you started seeing him take, you know, those quick passes rather than look for the deep passes. Now, he didn't completely go away from it, but you start to see him read it a little bit different than what he had when Callahan was head coach.
I thought the crew at the Athletic Football Show brought up some really interesting context in this discussion about Cam Ward. For example, they mentioned that the Titans were second in the NFL last season in the percentage of wide receiver screens they ran, but they were 31st in success rate on those plays. What does that tell you?
That tells you it has nothing to do with Cam. I did my job, which was get the ball to you quickly. You didn't do your job by executing the play and getting the first down or yards after. Either you didn't do your job, or the guy in front of you that's blocking for you didn't do their job. Again, that's, you see the analytics, but then if you watch the game, it's like, no, that wasn't okay. He got the ball away. He did what he was supposed to do.
I think that's a really interesting one, because those plays should be the quick read. You're taking the decision out of the quarterback.
Layups,
yeah.
So to speak.
Extension of the run.
Exactly. D-Mace used that term during the break. That's a great way to put it. It's designed to get your completion percentage up, get the ball moving. Easy, high percentage pass that should lead to something. And the Titans could not collectively turn that into anything good. In fact, it was counterproductive.
So when I look at the numbers, and if you listen to this show, that's apparently my catchphrase, because I am a nerd and I like to look at the numbers, as you hear at the beginning of every hour. When I look at Cam Ward's performance split between pre-bye week and post-bye week, I do see a quarterback that made incremental progress, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. His completion percentage was up. He did a better job of avoiding sacks and evading pressure. As was it Sean Payton who said quarterback that stats are or sacks are a quarterback stat? Mm-hmm. So Cam Ward cut down on the sacks significantly. He did a better job of getting away from pressure. I also saw a quarterback that got a little lucky. He had one interception post-bye. He had a 10-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio following the bye week. I don't think he really got so much better at his decision-making that he only threw one interception. I think he got lucky sometimes. Some would-be interceptions were dropped or batted down or what have you. So it's still a work in progress. But if you believe that Cam Ward did take small steps forward following the bye week last season, the data would support that. What we need to see is, well, let me phrase it this way. So he made small steps mm-hmm. pre-bye to post-bye. How big do those steps need to be this season? Does he need a few more small steps? Does he need to take a couple big steps? That's what I'm wondering about as we near training camp and we start reevaluating Cam Ward in year two.
So again, there's more variables to this. It's a new offense. So he's not in the same space that he was at the end of the season. At the end of the season last year, based upon the playbook he had, he was further along. Now the team wasn't, but him knowing the offense, he was further along. If they were to come back again in that same offense, I'm glad they're not, but had they come back again in that same offense, you would tend to believe that he has more of a grasp of that offense. So he should, based upon his skill set, the people they're at, say if they added the same people, he should be a better player because now half of the work is done knowing the playbook. Now you can just go out there and play, you know, go out there and play, but you also got to read defense. But I'm just saying, as far as just knowing the playbook, that part is gone. You know it now.
I just think in a big sense, my theme of this whole thing is there are a lot of variables, and we watched all the games, mm-hmm. right? So we see the improvement. We see the flashes of brilliance. But if you just ignore the fact that the analytics aren't just below average, they are way down at the bottom. They have to look at that and say, how do we get, like, he could make a lot of improvement in those analytic numbers and still be below average.
I think
that would still be a nice jump from year one to year two.
We played the clip from Robert Mace. Yeah. He made that point. Like, if Cam Ward ends the season year two as a quote unquote below average quarterback, slightly below average, that's better than what he was in his rookie season.
It'd be a big improvement. It's
right.
Like, it's like going from but a D-minus to a C. You're like a C.
But when you hear
that, but
when you hear, oh, he's going to be a below-average quarterback in year two of his career, people don't want to hear that.
They don't.
But I think the point is well made. But again, it's hard to sell people on, well, Cam Ward, in year two, he went from being an awful quarterback to a below-average quarterback. Like, it's,
well, if you say it that way, then I think people, their first yes. reaction is, oh, no, we need more. We need better. But I just, for Cam, in a new offense, with new players, and that's the thing, too. It's like you have two new additions to this offense that are critical to your development. Well, three, the offensive coordinator, a wide and two wide receivers. So you have three people that are new to this to you. So you have to now, build a rapport with them, and they got to build a rapport with you. If everybody was coming back and everybody was the same, I would tend to believe the next year it would look a lot different than it did last season. But again, people, he's still in a new offense this year. So he may not hit his stride until 3, 4, 5 weeks into the process. Again, this is not the same offense he was running last year. So they put a playbook in his face 3 months ago. And he has to get through all of that to be able to go out there on the field, process it, regurgitate it, and and still go out there and play at a level that everybody is satisfied with. That takes some time. It took some time last year. It seemed like he started to get in his groove late. It's going to take time this year. But I'm not excusing if he plays bad, period.
D-Mace, Bingen and Donick, 102.5. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Derek Mason, here Adam Bingen, wrapping up the show. Want to give a quick shout-out to someone who probably doesn't want me to give him a shout-out. Peter LaViolette. Peter LaViolette reportedly, I don't believe it's been made official, Peter LaViolette reportedly will be the next head coach of the L.A. Kings. Get this, guys. L.A. will be LaViolette's seventh stop as an NHL head coach. He was with the, let me see if I can get this in order without looking. Islanders, Hurricanes, Flyers, Predators, Capitals, Rangers, Kings.
Very well done.
Only three coaches, by my count, have coached more teams in NHL history than Peter LaViolette. Mike Keenan, Roger Nielsen, and Rick Bonus, all of whom have coached eight teams. So Peter LaViolette.
Rick Bonus has been the head coach for eight teams?
Eight teams,
wow,
yes.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yes.
The traveling circus.
Look, you know what you're getting with Peter LaViolette. He's going to go in there. He's going to raise some hell. You're going to win some games. And then.
I'm gone. See ya.
But he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Like he's,
yes.
He's
a very good coach.
He has an expiration date right on his back.
It's on the contract. Expiration date.
There was a coach that coached for Tennessee at one point in college basketball named Kevin O'Neill. One of the great characters of the game. Just complete wacky. Right, but he would talk about the concept of the five and dive, right? He thought that most coaches, most places, are going to wear out their welcome at some point. So he thought it was a smart move for coaches to get out on a good note, and then go on to the next one. Peter LaViolette, he always, at least to this point in his career, seems to energize any team he's with for a while, but then it does seem to go stale. And that seems to be the cycle. So he is kind of like the NHL's version of the five and dive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But he's taken a couple teams to the Stanley Cup final. He's won a cup. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. It's just fun that, in theory, it'll be LaViolette against Tortorella. The two winningest U.S.-born coaches of all time will be in the same division next year.
Who would be another sports equivalent to Peter?
Of the five and dive?
Yeah.
Well, Billy Martin in baseball was the ultimate, and he never made it to five half the time. He got fired after two. Like, he would go energize somebody, and then after two and a half years, he would burn out. And, of course, famously for the Yankees, he got fired, I don't know, by Steinbrenner at least five or six times, and then they brought him back equal amounts of times. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think of some other ones.
Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers is a good one. Yeah. I don't think football has
Larry
one.
Larry Brown, we talked about
yeah,
him.
Larry like, Brown's it, the same. You have to throw Larry Brown in there. Yeah. Football, I'm not sure if football has one.
Who are some football guys who have been? Pete Carroll's been a number of different places.
Bill Parcells.
He's got a little bit of that.
Parcells is only what? Who? He was the Giants.
And then he retired for a while. Then the Patriots.
Oh, Miami. He went
again.
To Miami.
Well, he went to Dallas.
Dallas.
Yeah, I don't think he ever went to Miami. Just those three, right?
Yeah, Dallas, Giants, and the Jets. No, Patriots.
Hmm. Josh McDaniels has been the offensive coordinator for, like, the Patriots eight times or something like that.
Yeah, Josh McDaniels the same way. He's been coordinator back and forth with New England and head coach at several different places. Would Lane Kiffin be considered?
That's not a bad idea. Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. Because it seemed like he started getting things going at each place and then other than the Raiders. But then it was like, you out of here. So I would tend to throw Lane up there, too.
I do think LaViolette, too, that might be a good spot for him from a media perspective, Adam, where his name was out there in Toronto. I was just thinking, Peter LaViolette with the Toronto media, man, that would be.
He had a problem with me. Imagine having a problem with them.
The word that came to mind for that would be combative. That would,
yes.
Could not help to be combative. I think the L.A. might be unique in that it's a big market, but you're kind of in the middle of this huge area where there's a lot of teams, a lot of things going on, and not a ton of people covering the team. He might be better off in a spot like that.
How about James Franklin?
James Franklin's an interesting one. Now, he was at Penn State for a long time.
So Vandy, Penn State, he's at Virginia Tech now. Yeah. What if it, you know, gives them 3-4 years and then he's gone?
That's a good question. He actually lasted at Penn State longer than a lot of people thought, mm-hmm. right? They looked like he was on the verge of wearing out his welcome, and then they'd have a good enough year and he'd get an extension. Right? He was there for over 10 years, wasn't he?
Yeah,
12
close
years?
To it, or if not
2013
over
was his last year at Vanderbilt, so 2014
yeah, you're right.
got fired last year, so 12 years. I mean, that's pretty stable. Yeah.
He coached from 2014 to 2025
that's
at Penn
State. That's way above average, mm-hmm. right, for the college football coach per season or per program.
That was not the only NHL coaching-related news today. Elliot Freeman, among others, reported that the Edmonton Oilers are considering hiring Mike Babcock. Speaking of coaches who have short shelf lives. In case you forgot, in 2023, Babcock resigned as coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets before the season began after being accused of invading players' privacy by looking at their phones. He never coached a game for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He came in. He was blacklisted in the NHL. For several years because of some, how would you describe it, Willie? I'm trying to think of the best way to describe. I don't want to say bullying, but, you know, I can't.
Belittling,
you know, yeah.
Very old school, and I think a lot of his former players have taken issue with mm-hmm.
with
his methods.
Yes.
Even though he did win. Like he won big, right?
Yes.
He beat Canada gold medal, multiple cups with the Red Wings. So he's got the wins to back up his methods. But a lot of his players have said it crossed the line in a lot of ways. And then the whole thing with the phones put it all together and the Blue Jackets just pulled the plug before he ever coached. And I think a lot of people thought. And remember, too, he was in Toronto. He was famously the highest paid coach in the league by far, and the results weren't real good. And Mitch Marner was one in particular that there was a big story about how he handled Marner as a very young player.
If I recall correctly, Babcock asked Marner who the hardest and least hardest working players on the team were, and then apparently told those players, hey, here's what Mitch said about you, or something along
something
along those lines. One texter says Marty Schottenheimer, as an example of a
five
coach.
And dive.
Yes. Yeah. Buzz Williams, another texter mentioned. So, no, look, Peter Laviolette's a very good coach. He and I, we butted heads for a while when he was here, but I always have had a tremendous amount of respect for Peter Laviolette. He's one hell of a hockey coach. So, we'll see how he does with the Kings. Reportedly hired his seventh NHL team for Peter Laviolette. Tonight, in just about 2 hours, game 3 of the NBA Finals, Spurs at Knicks. Knicks up 2-0, looking to go up 3-0. No NBA team has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in the NBA Finals, or ever? I can't recall if it's one or the other.
It may be the
final. I think it's ever.
Maybe once.
I think it's ever.
NBA teams. I know not in the finals.
Definitely
not in the finals. Definitely not in the finals. I know that. I'm thinking it happened in the playoffs before.
Let's see. In the NBA.
Was it Dikembe Mutombo?
There has never been a successful comeback from a 3-0 deficit in the NBA to date. Ever. Regardless of round. It's never happened. It's happened a few times in the NHL, for example.
It's happened more in the NHL than any other sport. And it happened, of course, with the Red Sox and the Yankees. But that's the that's still the only time it's happened in baseball, right? Down 3-0?
Let's find out. Only one team has overcome a 3-0 deficit, the Red Sox over the Yankees in 2004. That's it. In the NHL, it's happened four times in the NHL. It's never happened in the NBA. Mm. So if the Knicks win tonight, you can probably kiss it goodbye for the San Antonio Spurs.
Either they're going to win it in four or they're going to win it in five, but they're going to win it.
My mayor's Muslim. My bagel's Jewish. My Christian's Dior. Knicks in four.
Knicks in four.
Lakers in five.
If they
Knicks
win
in four.
If they win in four, that's one of the more impressive mowing down the competition runs for four rounds in NBA history, right? They've only lost one game, right?
Well, no, the – let me see.
They've won 13 consecutive games, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Now, when the Sixers and Moses Malone, they only lost one.
One game. That's
the first game. But I think the first round – that was only three. They had a bye, I think, in the first round. They only had to play three rounds.
The Knicks were down 2-1 in the series against Atlanta. They lost games 2 and 3 against Atlanta and haven't lost since.
Yeah. Okay. So they were down 2-1 against Atlanta.
Yeah. Yes. That seems like ages ago. Yeah,
that's a long time ago.
Months ago, it seems like.
But still.
I mean, listen, the Knicks at the beginning of the tournament, well, of the
playoffs.
Yeah, playoffs, NBA finals, let's just say it. Beginning of the NBA finals, we had a discussion, or we were talking about, well, how can the Knicks win, or what needs to happen? And my thing was, if they allow the Knicks to be physical, and they allow Karl-Anthony Towns to be physical, then it's going to be, even though I think San Antonio is a physical team, it's going to be a hard matchup for San Antonio. Because I don't think man for man, they are as tough and physical as the Knicks are. And I don't think Wemby faced anyone that could be that physical with him and was willing to be that physical, other than Hackenstance, whoever his name was. Because what you call it, short, was it? And Karl Anthony Towns.
Hartenstein with Oklahoma City, yeah, exactly. Because Chet Holmgren
He wasn't going to be it. So Karl Anthony Towns, as well as Williams, they are being physical with him.
You know what's interesting?
And it's wearing him down.
I'm blanking on the – who's the commentator, Jason? Used to play for Arizona, played in the league forever.
I know Jason. I know you're talking about. Gosh.
I don't know why. He pointed out repeatedly while we look up his name.
Where did he say this?
On the broadcast during
Richard Jefferson?
Richard
Jefferson?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Played for the Wildcats.
Yes. He made this point repeatedly as he was watching it during the game. They were letting ridiculous amounts of shoving, like full-on two-hand shoves where your guys off the ball. Like they've got to talk to both teams kind of thing. Like it was a little bit out of control.
But if they're allowing both teams to be physical, then
being physical, and then it's just, you know, I take two hands and shove you. Nobody wants to see that.
Nah, you're right. Somebody get hurt.
Well, we'll see what happens in the NBA Finals Game 3 coming up tonight. Can't wait to see what Madison Square Garden is like. That'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow, of course, at 3 p.m. Jeff Marek, hockey host extraordinaire, will join us at 4. We'll get into the Predators' new-look front office and what the offseason could look like from here for the Nashville Predators. Trevor Maddich will also join the program, as he does every Tuesday. We'll continue the discussion on Brendan Sorsby. People are pissed. That's one way to put it, lightly. But in the meantime, have a wonderful rest of your evening. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Beloved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We will be back on these airwaves starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 102.5 The Game. And as I always say, we're going to be talking and
you're going to be listening.
Peace.